May the words of my mouth and the meditations of our hearts be always acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. This morning, our biblical readings point towards what some scholars have called the pivotal analogy for Christian ministry and pastoral care. God is the pastor of all the children of creation. God appointed kings like David to be the chief pastors and leaders for the people and the nation of Israel. Jesus taught and sent forth his disciples with the traditional work and role of the shepherd as the principal paradigm for much of their ministries. Indeed, for most of the last 2,000 years in the history of Christianity, the shepherd has been a recurring reference point for the understanding of pastoral care. Until the early 20th century, pastoral ministry was taught under the disciplinary rubric poimenics, the Greek word which translates as shepherding or pastoral care. I suspect that in the early centuries of the Common Era, perhaps even into the 18th or 19th centuries, a significant percentage of human beings in many countries in the world had some familiarity with life in rural agrarian settings. Many of them would have owned sheep and goats, and a significant number of them may have done some shepherding themselves, perhaps in their youth. Over the years, I've actually given considerable thought to the metaphors of pastoral care which are implicit in this vision, which sees sheep on the one hand as being in a relationship and the shepherds or pastors on the other side of that relationship. Today, some people might actually be offended by the implications of these metaphors. We might ask, what do sheep represent? And what does shepherding or pastoral care supply? In a more agricultural environment, these implications might be more obvious to all. I must confess to some significant involvement with sheep during my lifetime. When I was in elementary school in a suburban town in western Massachusetts, I had an elderly neighbor who kept 6 sheep and 2 goats on her 8-acre plot of land opposite the new housing development where my family lived. She was a character. In addition to the sheep and the goats, she also collected cars which would not run anymore, and there were 20 of them on her personal property. I was never invited inside her house. I have a feeling it may have been a rather chaotic scene, but we met to talk frequently, and we would always sit in the back seat of one or another of the 20 cars. Occasionally, she and her husband, a very buttoned-up certified public accountant, would travel for days or weeks at a time, and I was trained to look after the sheep and goats in their absence. If sheep, our alleged role models, are stupid, and be assured that they are, does that mean that every human being is stupid as well? I think not. Have we, like sheep, to coin a phrase, really gone astray? Perhaps because we didn't know any better. Indeed, have we, like sheep, gone astray because we don't know much of anything, period? I think human knowledge is more powerful than that. Are shepherds or pastors intelligent by contrast? Are they really wise and invariably a little gray around the temples? But what about those young shepherd boys? Where did they fit in? For that matter, what were the shepherds in the nativity story really like? Did they really look and act like ceramic Hummel figures? Of sheep, it must also be said, are amongst the very vulnerable animals. They're vulnerable to wolves, especially to wolves concealed in sheep's clothing. And they are even more vulnerable, as Jesus points out, to bad shepherding practices and inattentive and careless shepherds. Sheep need leaders, utterly reliable shepherds with maturity and spiritual depth. Even with sound leadership, the sheep may wander off, get lost, get hurt, experience medical emergencies, or simply get stolen. The received wisdom is that sheep are sweet and innocent. But in fact, that depends on which shepherd you happen to speak to and who the sheep are in terms of their personality and receptivity to leadership. Jesus even suggests in some places in Scripture that some of the sheep are actually goats, and therein lies an entirely different story, because goats are often willful, angry, and destructive animals. Now, sheep are among the most utilitarian and versatile members of the animal kingdom. I apologize for any offense I may be giving to the vegans in our midst today. In diverse cultures and various parts of the world, sheep have provided food, including meat and other dairy products such as cheese. They are a splendid source of clothing and warmth. Indeed, nothing beats a wool blanket on a cold wintry night. And sheep have been central resources in diverse religious observances and ritual sacrifices around the world. They have been a sign of wealth, a basic element in prenuptial dowries, and so very much more. Put another way, down through the centuries, sheep could make or break a stewardship campaign. Today's reading from the 23rd chapter of the prophet Jeremiah makes clear reference to both shepherds who failed God and his people, and to new shepherds who are raised up in order that Judah would be saved and Israel would live in safety. The still familiar words of the 23rd Psalm, which we just heard sung so beautifully, remind us that the Lord is our shepherd, and we shall not want. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow us all the days of our lives, and we shall dwell in the house of the Lord our whole life long. This 23rd Psalm is kind of etched into my spirit and mind. In my childhood, Psalm 23rd was drummed into me at Sunday school and at church. And ultimately, one year in my public school. It was my first grade class. It was the custom in my hometown that the Lord's Prayer was recited every day at the start of the first class of the morning. But a crisis arose on the first day of school when it turned out my first grade teacher, a new hire, Mrs. Feinberg, was Jewish. The town school committee had an emergency meeting and decided that Mrs. Feinberg should not be subjected to 180 recitations of the Lord's Prayer. And instead, in our classroom, we recited the 23rd Psalm on 180 mornings. Today's reading from the second chapter of Paul's letter to the Ephesians offers what now sounds like a naive expectation of reconciliation between the uncircumcised and the circumcised. Indeed, there have been conflicts between Jews and Gentiles in almost every generation of human history, though certainly the Holocaust represented one of the worst. And it appears to be that anti-Semitism is growing yet again in our land. Disinformation and the denial of reality and sound historical research raise serious questions about our ability to live into peace, justice, and love for all who dwell in our land and for those who dwell around the world, whatever their religion may be. Finally, our reading from the sixth chapter of Mark's Gospel begins with the disciples telling Jesus about their first missionary undertaking. He then invites them to go away to a quiet place. But of course, throngs of people follow Jesus and the disciples, as was always the case. Mark writes, as Jesus went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion on them, because they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he began to teach them many things. What ensues is an outpouring of seemingly countless people who come to Jesus bringing their sick with them, and when they touched the fringe of Jesus' cloak, all who touched it were healed. I am convinced that we live in a time when we sheep are brothers and sisters sheep of every variety need shepherds more than ever. Shepherds that come out of congregations like this one, priests and deacons and laity, who will bring countless gifts as they meet with countless people and hear about their need for safety, health, sobriety, forgiveness, justice, and so much more. And the question is, can we rise up, some of us in this place and in this neighborhood, and endeavor to bring some of those healing qualities, not only to people inside this parish, but inside this neighborhood, and even more to those who dwell in the city, the state, the nation, and around the world? This is a time of brokenness, of distrust, of fear, and both physical and emotional illness. I want to say that the Episcopal Church has taken these themes seriously, more so at times and less at other times. In the late 19th century, some of you may know that Mary Baker Eddy invented a new religion called Christian Science. And she had a very effective ministry with older women who belonged to urban Episcopal parishes. And there was an outpouring of Episcopalians into the Christian Science Church. I think dollars always get a certain amount of attention in the church, and attendance does too. But in a very short time, there emerged in the Episcopal Church what was called the Emmanuel Movement. And there are parishes affiliated with the Emmanuel movement even today. But it was a movement that said, Mary Baker Eddy is not alone. We Episcopalians also know that we can pray with and for the sick. We can listen to the grieving. We can help the bereaved. And that is part of the ministry of pastoral care that falls not only to clergy, but to all of us to one degree or another. In the early 20th century, there emerged what was called clinical pastoral education. It too was very influential in the Episcopal Church because Episcopalians said, all this new knowledge that's emerging in psychology and psychiatry from people like Freud and Jung and so very many more, our information and healing tools that our clergy and lay shepherds need to know. And now for over 100 years, many seminarians, many deacons, many priests, and indeed many lay leaders have taken clinical pastoral education in mostly hospitals, so there are some other settings as well, and they emerge with a capacity to listen more clearly and more carefully. And then starting in the 1960s, the hospice movement emerged first in England, but it rapidly spread to some places in the United States. And in the early 1980s, I actually worked at St. Luke's Hospital, used to be at Amsterdam and 112th I forget what the current merger calls it, but I was the hospice chaplain, and then I became the first AIDS chaplain, starting a program for early AIDS patients. And our work was informed by clinical pastoral education, but it was also informed by the kind of acts of care and kindness that are ever so much a part of the hospice movement, along with the careful listening and the care. And I sometimes operated outside the box a little bit. Some of my patients weren't very religious. Some had never been to church. I tried to embody the care of Christ and the care of the church for whoever happened to be patient. And with one patient, I asked the question one day, "Is there anything I could do for you?" And he said, "I would just love a dish of strawberry ice cream." And I went off to the Häagen-Dazs, got him some strawberry ice cream, and we were then started on a significant pastoral relationship. I had to go to a conference in Pittsburgh, which was devoted to AIDS, and I asked one of the clinical pastoral education students if he would get ice cream for this particular patient on Thursday. And it happened he came in with the Häagen-Dazs ice cream, and he ran into the CPE supervisor, the training supervisor in this program. And Chaplain Hart said to the seminarian, "What are you doing? What do you have?" And he said, "I have some ice cream for one of Chaplain Doubleday's patients." And the chaplain said, "Don't you remember I told you you never ask the patient what can I do for you? You only ask, what can you tell me? Or what do you want to tell me?" Let me be clear. Pastoral listening is important, but acts of care and kindness and assistance and love are important too.